Hello, everyone. I'm going to read for you some Edward Gorey stories from this big book of his short stories that I have. I absolutely adore Edward Gorey. It's creepy and it's off-putting, and you know, it's really the illustrations that make it so interesting, which you guys obviously can't see, but you know, we'll make do here. So let's just get started with this one. It's called The Fatal Lozenge. Some of these are going to be funny, some of these are going to be sexual, some of these are going to be creepy. And I think The Fatal Lozenge is definitely a creepy one. An apparition of her lover she recognizes with dismay, and later on she will discover that he himself had died today. The baby, lying meek and quiet upon the customary rug, has dreams about the rampage and riot and will grow up to be a thug. The cad decides he has grown weary of this affair, and that is that. And so he tells her just how dreary he thinks she is, then leaves the flat. The drudge expends her life in mopping and emptying and filling pails, and she will do so, never stopping, until her strength entirely fails. The effigy, got up with clothing abstracted from the victim's room, is raised aloft to cheers of loathing before it meets a flaming doom. The fetishist gets out the hassock, turns down the lamp, and bolts the door. Then in galoshes and a cassock, he worships it upon the floor. That's some of y'all on Gundam Wild Audio. The governess, up in the attic, attempts to make a cup of tea. Her mind grows daily more erratic from cold and hunger and ennui. The hermit lives among the boulders. He wears no garment but a sack. By slow degrees his reason molders. The sun has long since turned him black. The invalid wakes up in terror to feel his toes becoming numb. The doctor's made another error. What unknown symptoms are to come? The journalist surveys the slaughter, the best in years without a doubt. He pours himself a gin and water and wonders how it came about. The keeper, when it's time for luncheon, flings down his charge upon the bread, and taking out a homemade truncheon, belabors him about the head. The lazar, blessed with an appearance enough to give the strongest qualms, has little need of perseverance and prompting a display of alms. The magnate waits upon the pavement for his enormous limousine and ponders further child enslavement and other projects still more mean. The nun is fearfully bedeviled. She runs about and moans and shrieks. Her flesh is bruised, her clothes disheveled. She's been like this for weeks and weeks. The orphan, whom there's none to cherish, strays through the gloom on naked feet. She presently will fall and perish, unnoticed in some squalid street. The proctor buys a pupil ices and hopes the boy will not resist when he attempts to practice vices few people even know exist. The quarry, fleeing from the outing, sinks panting in the reed and mud and hearkens to the distant shouting that tells him they are out for blood. The resurrectionist goes plying without ado his simple trade. Material is always dying and got with nothing but a spade. The suicide, as she is falling, illuminated by the moon, regrets her act and finds appalling the thought that she will be dead so soon. The tourist huddles in the station while slowly night gives way to dawn. He finds certain fascination in knowing all the trains are gone. The sight of uncle gives no pleasure, but rather causes much alarm. His children know that at his leisure he plans to have them come to harm. The visitor was somewhat pensive when she arrived to pay a call, but now she's faint and apprehensive from waiting of hours in the hall. The wanton, though she knows its dangers, must needs smear coal about her eyes and wake the interest of strangers with long-drawn, hoarse, erotic sighs. The xenophobe grabs at the table. He feels his toes and fingers curl. He is only barely able to keep from striking down the girl. The yegg on rubber soles comes creeping inside the house when it is late, and while the occupants are sleeping, removes the heirlooms and the plate. The zouave used to war and battle would sooner take a life than not. It scarcely has begun to prattle when he impales the hapless tot. I adore Edward Gorey. All right. Water break. All right. This next one is called The Curious Sofa, a pornographic work by Ogred Weary. So this is meant as a satire of little soft porn novels that were coming out at the time. Alice was eating grapes in the park when Herbert, an extremely well-endowed young man, introduced himself to her. He invited her to go for a ride in a taxicab, on the floor of which they did something Alice had never done before. After they had done it several times in different ways, Herbert suggested that Alice tidy up at the home of his aunt, Lady Celia, who welcomed them with great cordiality. Lady Celia led Alice to her boudoir, where she requested the girl to perform a rather surprising service. Downstairs, the three of them played a most amusing game of Herbert's own invention called Thumble Fumble. They then sat down to a sumptuous tea. After he had finished the washing up, Albert, the butler, an unusually well-formed man of middle age, joined them for another frolic. Herbert and Lady Celia had little difficulty in persuading Alice to spend a few days with them. In the interval before dinner, she perused an album of instructive chromolithographs, which Lady Celia had thoughtfully set out. Colonel Gilbert and his wife, Louise, came in after dinner. Both of them had wooden legs, with which they could do all sorts of entertaining tricks. The evening was a huge success, in spite of someone fainting from time to time. Alice, quite exhausted, was helped to bed by Lady Celia's French maid, Lise, whom she found delightfully sympathetic. The next morning, she was wakened in a novel fashion by Lady Celia in time for tea. Looking out the window, she saw Herbert, Albert, and Harold, the gardener, an exceptionally well-made youth, disporting themselves on the lawn. Oh no, I forgot about this part. I'm gonna have to tag this audio beast. They were soon joined by Donald, Herbert's singularly well-favored sheepdog, and many were the giggles and barks that came from the shrubbery. Oof, sorry guys. They called up to Alice, who, having put on an ingeniously constructed bathing slip, met them in the pool. At luncheon, which was al fresco, Lady Celia announced they were invited to the Gilberts for the weekend. To beguile the tedium of the journey, Albert read aloud from Volume 11 of the Encyclopedia of Unimaginable Customs. As they drove up to the house, Lucy, the Gilbert's daughter, and Gerald, her fiancé, an uncommonly well-shaped older man, emerged from an ornamental urn. That evening in the library, Scylla, one of the guests who had certain anatomical peculiarities, demonstrated the Lithuanian typewriter, assisted by Ronald and Robert, two remarkably well-set-up young men from the village. Later, Reginald, another remarkably well-set-up young man from the village, provided everyone with the most astonishing little device. Still later, Gerald did a terrible thing to Elsie with a saucepan. The party split into twos and threes before retiring. At breakfast, it was learned that Elsie had expired during the night, and gloom descended on everybody. When a change of scene was proposed, Lady Celia suggested a visit to the nearby seat of Sir Egbert, a dear friend of her youth. When they got there, they found Sir Egbert, an extraordinarily well-proportioned gentleman, and his friend Louis having a romp on the terrace. They all went indoors and worked up some most intriguing charades. During the light buffet supper, Louis did a dance with a boa. Sir Egbert offered to show them his famous sofa. Alice felt a shudder of nameless apprehension. It stood in a windowless room lined with polar bear fur and otherwise empty. It was upholstered in scarlet velvet and had 9 legs and 7 arms. As soon as everybody had crowded into the room, Sir Egbert fastened shut the door and started up the machinery inside the sofa. When Alice saw what was about to happen, she began to scream uncontrollably. Dot, dot, dot. All right, so there's two more things from this that I want to read you. So one is just like totally just bizarre. So I'll start with that one. It's called The Object Lesson. It was already Thursday, but his lordship's artificial limb could not be found. Therefore, having directed the servants to fill the baths, he seized the tongs and set out at once for the edge of the lake, where the Throbblefoot spectre still loitered in a distraught manner. He presented it with a length of string and passed on to the statue of Corrupted Endeavor to await the arrival of Autumn. Meanwhile, on the tower, Madame O, in conversation with an erstwhile cousin, saw that his mustache was not his own, on which she flung herself over the parapet and surreptitiously vanished. He descended, destroying the letter unread, and stepped backwards into the water for a better view. "Heavens, how dashing!" cried the people in the dinghy, and Echo answered, "Count the spoons!" On the shore, a bat, or possibly an umbrella, disengaged itself from the shrubbery, causing those nearby to recollect the miseries of childhood. Oh my god, that is definitely what I'm calling this audio. It now became apparent, despite the lack of library paste, that something had happened to the vicar. Guns began to go off in the distance. At twilight, however, no message had come from the asylum, so the others retired to the kiosk, only to discover the cakes iced a peculiar shade of green and the tea urn empty, save for a card on which was written the single word, farewell. Wow. All right, let me find these limericks. There's a lot of them, so I'm just gonna pick one from each page. Oh, of course, I have to read this one. There was a young lady named Rose who fainted whenever she chose. She did so one day while playing croquet, but was quickly revived with a hose. A dreary young bank clerk named Fennis wished to foster an aura of menace. To make people afraid, he wore gloves of gray suede and white footgear intended for tennis. A clerical student named Prine through pain sought to reach the divine. He wore a hair shirt, quite often ate dirt, and bathed every Friday in brine. There was a young woman named Plunnery who rejoiced in the practice of gunnery, till one day unobservant she blew up a servant and was forced to retire to a nunnery. Some Harvard men, stalwart and hairy, drank up several bottles of sherry. In the yard around three, they were shrieking with glee, "Come on out, we are burning a fairy." Which is another word for a gay man at the time, and I think Edward Gorey was gay, so. A guest in a household quite charmless was informed its eccentric was harmless. If you're caught unawares at the head of the stairs, just remember, he's eyeless and armless. Each night Father fills me with dread when he sits on the foot of my bed. I not mind that he speaks and gibbers and squeaks, but for 17 years he's been dead. There was a young woman named Els who was subject to curious spells. When got up very oddly, she'd cry out things ungodly by the palms in expensive hotels. Said a girl who upon her divan was attacked by a virile young man, such excess of passion is quite out of fashion, and she fractured his wrist with her fan. Oh, get it. A young lady who lived by the usk substituted each day on a rusk. She ate the first bite before it was light and the last crumb sometime after the dusk. While traveling in farthest Tibet, Lord Irongate found cause to regret the buttered up tea and pain in his knee and the frivolous tourists he met. An incautious young woman named Ven was seen with the wrong sort of men. She vanished one day, but the following May, her legs were retrieved from a fen. Alright, so that's all I'm gonna read because much longer and Soundgasm will get mad at me for trying to upload. So thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed. Let's just kind of count this one as the first step in my soft return to audio making. So I miss you guys. I miss this place. I'll see you around.